Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolutionary.org Hardcore 2.0 episode 54 coming your way. HGH and peptides with Parapharma part 2. If you haven't checked out part 1 yet, go back. It's episode 53. So we're continuing. Basically, we're doing a 2-hour long podcast special. And we cut off part 1 as 53, and this is going to be 54. So in part 1, if you haven't checked that one out before, we went over so much stuff. We went over Parapharma. We went over what HGH is. We went over some examples of where people would use it. We went over so much stuff on it. All the most modern, up-to-date information on HGH that you're going to find anywhere. So in this one, it's going to be a fun one. And what else did we discuss in part one, Mobster, for people to go back and listen to?
There was stuff like the way the science and the media doesn't necessarily back up practical use that we've seen in athletes. Bodybuilders seem to have an edge in terms of the information because, of course, they use it in performance enhancement levels. We talked about the clinical use, that people go to clinics for anti-aging and so on and so forth, although we're going to go into a little bit more detail on that now. And especially, I think there's some more to do with the misconceptions, Steve, as an example. You talked on the pre-show yesterday, and I said that I looked at a news item where they talked about teens using growth hormone, and what they were actually talking about, fantastic headline, but they were talking about an over-the-counter product. So the way that the media perceives it, the way that doctors and medical science don't seem to support use, but of course they're using it for medical purposes at lower dosages, and the difference between that and performance enhancement, and we're going to talk about today especially.
Yeah.
The depth and the detail between what a pro use, what amateur would use, and just even things like, I think we touched upon some of the side effects when we talked about.
We also talked about HGH versus steroids. What is the difference? A lot of people think growth hormone is a steroid. A lot of people think growth hormone is this or that. We talked about how it's a peptide. We talked about how to naturally boost your growth hormone levels, which would also boost your natural testosterone level. So when you do use HGH or use steroids, you'll get even better benefits. And we discussed, of course, how to reconstitute HGH as well. When you get your Paratropin 100 kit, you know, you're getting these vials and you're like, well, how am I supposed to put things in? So if you haven't checked out that podcast, please go back and listen to it before you listen to this one. Because in this one, it's going to be a little more fun. A lot of you guys are going to enjoy it. And in this one, what we're going to talk about is benefits of HGH specifically. We're going to talk about things like anti-aging benefits, what benefits it has in bodybuilding, etc. We're also going to talk about how to use HGH, whether you're an average Joe or a professional. And we're in for a real treat because we have a professional actually on the forum. Our forum's part of our team. And he is a pro, he's got a pro card, legitimate pro card at a very, very high level. And he put together a cycle that he is using to compete this year. And we're going to talk about that cycle and how it includes and how much HGH it includes and what else he's putting in it. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things like other benefits like fat loss and injury repair. We're going to talk about the side effects. You know, we're going to talk about everything. And we're going to give you the good and some of the bad that come with HGH. And then we're also going to touch on ACG, which is also a peptide available from Parapharma. And we're going to give you our thoughts on ACG, what it is and what it does, because a lot of people really get bombarded with ACG marketing. And they want to use ACG, but they don't really understand what it is. So we're going to get into this. This is going to be a really great show, Mobster. I'm really looking forward to it. So let's start off, you know, with the benefits of HGH. And let's talk about some of the benefits like anti-aging. So, Mobster, go ahead.
So I'll touch on this, Steve, and also talk about the recovering from injuries, for example. So a lot of clinics, and we've discussed TRT, et cetera, and other shows, when we talk about going to clinics for various reasons. So we've got what we call life extension clinics. You're talking about the TRT type stuff that we've touched upon, and also HGH. And of course, one of the things that Steve said in previous shows that sometimes you'll go there for a particular reason and it's in their interest to sell you other products. The specific what we're looking at here is the anti-aging and injury recovery. Okay, so you know, us older people, and I'm talking about myself at 59, and especially in this day and age, Steve, there's a sort of there's two facets to it. One is how you look, and arguably, whether you want to argue about it or not, looking younger benefits you in business, in politics, in life. And it shouldn't do, but it does, because we judge things physically before we get into how good this person is as a politician or an actor or an athlete or whatever. And so the anti-aging property is what you're really talking about when you say anti-aging, Steve, is not really injury recovery, the aches and strains that older people have. It's literally about looking younger. So what we're talking about here, as often as not, Steve, is the younger faces, younger hands, less age spots, less lines around the eyes, less frown lines from the forehead, and so on and so forth. And of course, you can go down the Botox route, but what you're looking at, there's an injection of toxin into the skin versus literally regenerating cells and having those cells be quote-unquote younger, and therefore you looking younger. So there's that aspect to it. And it's a huge business. There's a great deal of money. Literally just in Hollywood, Steve, I would talk about the dermal abrasion and the creams and the various things that they can rub onto their face, plastic surgery, of course. But there'll be an enormous percentage of this for men and for women. It's not just women focused, where actors need to look a certain way on camera, under the lights, on that big 40, 50 foot screen. And there's only so much that CGI can do, and so on and so forth. And literally just going to talk to producers and getting a job. If you look old versus another person that you're competing against looking younger, it just human nature to pick the younger person. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes there. The other aspects and a benefit, and this is more for us athletically minded, which will be the listeners that we have for this show, Steve, as much as the anti-aging benefits, is injury recovery. And Steve and I have touched upon the way that professional athletes of all sports, and I'm thinking, as we usually use this example, Steve, of pro American football. Okay, now basketball, any sport, tennis, you name it, football, soccer, as we call it in this country, boxing, whatever. The nature of being a high-end athlete is that there is a risk that comes at performing your sport at a very highest level, both in training and in the sport itself, of injury. In order to become world-class, and I'm going to include myself in this because I've been international standard in my own chosen niche sport. For me to break a record, I risk injury, whether that's tearing up the skin, of calluses, whatever else, or whether it's literally, and we've had this happen at competition, Steve, where athletes have torn biceps in front of me. Okay, you're lifting some huge weight, you lift it wrong, and the bicep come away from the bone. Now, that I know from talking to strength athletes this has happened to, as well as high-end American football athletes that Steve's talked about on shows. Recovery from those injuries can be a huge time issue. It can sometimes take an athlete 2 fucking years to get back to peak levels of performance. So one of the things that they'll use as part of their recovery process is HGH. There'll be huge amounts of rehab, lots of retraining, sometimes getting other muscles to take up the slack, and so on and so forth. Then you've got to get that edge back that made you a world-class athlete, the mindset, and so on and so forth. Now, human growth hormone has been part of that process, Steve. So what are we looking at here, for example? And Steve and I have touched on this in shows, and a torn bicep is a great example again. Muscles grow very, very quickly when you use anabolic steroids. And then we used to get massive amounts of, in the 80s and 90s, pec tears, where the pec would pull away from the sternum, but typically away from the armpit, where it chucked in under the shoulder. And you'd see these, and you can find videos of this happening online, where the muscles disappeared into the middle of the chest, or the biceps disappeared up into the armpit. And it's horrendous because we think about the risk. But the problem was always thus, that the muscle would grow fantastically strong very quickly, but the connective tissue did not. Now, when it comes to growth hormone, it has some effect on the muscle, but when we're talking about the kind of injuries that we're talking about here, it's as much about the connective tissue, and that includes the fascia, the membrane around the muscle, all of the connective tissue, the actual tendons and sinews and little bits of membrane here and there that are holding the muscle against the bone, that are wrapped around the muscle and so on and so forth. And these take a lot longer to recover and a lot longer to get stronger than the muscle does with anabolics. So the combination of those two is the way obviously athletes like to go, but specifically here, you're looking to repair. So for example, in the case of a bicep tear, as often as not, Steve, it's the tendon that's torn from two or three strands to one strand, so it's barely hanging on. In this country, the NHS, and I know this from talking to athletes that these injuries have happened to, if you can still supinate your arm, you can still essentially do the curling motion, they will tell you, the NHS, the health service we have here, the free health service, that you have function. That's great if you're the average Joe. But if you're a high-end athlete performing and sponsorship and everything's connected to the you being on the field of play, and that's just having function's not good enough. I want to be able to throw a javelin. I want to be able to throw the ball. I want to be able to receive the ball. I want to be able to compete against world-class athletes for hundreds of millions of dollars per year sometimes at the highest possible level. And me not being able to do those things is a huge deal. And Steve, I mean, that's just on this thing as well. Not being able to do that stuff really fucks with your head. Not being able to function at that level when that's what you're used to and have been for 20, 30 years is a mindfuck. And one of the things that you and I'll finish off on this particular portion, have touched upon, I think you've mentioned a couple of times, a very high-ranking Hall of Famer in American football who spent as much time as a lot of athletes do now on rest and recovery and rehab, and has come back from terrible injuries and has still maintained for the longest period of time a fantastic level of function at the highest possible level. And that will come down to, whether they care to admit it or not, products like human growth hormone being used to aid that process, to keep them young. It also, as we've tied in before with yesterday's podcast, the active lifestyle, rest, recovery, great nutrition, and so on and so forth. And sometimes those athletes look younger. And that will, of course, come down to, again, whether they care to admit it or not, the use of growth hormone. You know the name of this athlete. I'm trying to think of them right now, but you'll know who I'm talking about, Steve.
You're talking about Tom Brady?
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, Tom Brady. Yeah, and Tom Brady, toward the end of his career, a lot of these quarterbacks and all these high-end players in the NFL, we've seen examples where they've there was one player, I believe it was Peyton Manning. He was coming off some injuries, and it may have been Tom Brady, it may have been one of those quarterbacks, but they actually had HGH sent to their spouse's address, and they actually found that out. So we know these guys are definitely all over it. So let's go over the benefits of HGH, and Mops already touched on a few, but let's kind of structure it a little bit and kind of go over each benefit and show you exactly how human growth hormone can help you. So, you know, Mobster went over faster recovery, but it's not just in the weight room. It's also when you're doing cardio. This is why Lance Armstrong, it's well known he was using HGH. Swimmers, it's well known they use HGH. Long distance runners, triathletes, blah, 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 blah. They use HGH because the challenge is recovery. You're doing these, pushing your body to its limits, whether it's in the weight room, whether it's on a bicycle, whether it's running, whether it's swimming, any of these, whether it's playing a sport, basketball, football, soccer, any of these sports, hockey, can you imagine like getting a little, like even just getting 10 or 15% more recovery after you do it? These NHL players, they have back-to-back nights they play. Can you imagine?
The average Joe, Steve, doesn't get the level to which these individuals will push themselves, whether that's pushing to the point of muscle nearly come off the bone, the level of pain and discomfort that's required. Football players, both soccer and American football, feet injuries just from kicking the ball and whatever else. And you're talking about physical pain on the body that will blow your minds. And to say that it's uncomfortable doesn't even begin to get there. So the ability to do that and then recover from it is hugely important. If I punch you in the face for half an hour, equivalent, you know, of 10 rounds in boxing, it's mind blowing. So the ability for a person to recover from that and come back in a very short period of time and hit peak performance again is super important, because of the sponsorship, the money you're being paid, or whatever else. I'll touch on a couple more, Stephen, and we go back and forth on this, improve cholesterol levels. We know how impactful using steroids can be on your cholesterol levels. And so anything that benefits you in that particular way is going to improve function for you. As Steve said, increased endurance and performance in the gym. I mean, literally going to the gym, fucking shit up in the positive way, coming out of the gym and recovering, and then being able to go back the next fucking day and do that. You and I started training, Steve, 3 days a week, and that's great for most people, but there is a point when, for professional reasons, you need to be in the gym more often, recovering, training, peaking for matches, games, et cetera, et cetera. So being able to come back quicker and recover quicker and have increased endurance in the gym, more weights lifted and quicker in terms of your cardiovascular ability to recover from being out of breath during sets and so on and so forth. And another one, I'll bring you back in, just higher energy levels. Literally meaning that you feel more, for want of a better phrase, Steve, vital. Feeling that you have better cardiovascular ability. This isn't just recovering and getting your breath back and having your heart return to normal, but literally having that sensation of well-being and fitness and energy throughout the day that only comes when you're at that particular level. I've been there a few times when I've combined running and weights together, and I would feel so goddamn fit, Steve. I would train in the morning and feel like I could go back in and do another training session all over again. I didn't, because that would have been a bad idea, but I felt like I could. So my recovery was through the roof. And that's exactly what you want as a high-end athlete, or even just as an average Joe that wants to get the best out of a body. You do a couple more there, Steve.
Yeah, and I describe the energy not like a stimulant effect, but it's like a it's like feeling 17 again, because you're getting that big flush of HGH, and that's basically what it feels. And that ties into the next one, which is increased libido. And again, 100%. It's not going to, if you're a guy and you're in like in a sexless marriage and you can't get it up and you don't find your wife attractive anymore, taking HGH isn't going to fix it. It's going to make you feel younger again. And we see those commercials. I don't think you have them in Britain, Mobster, thankfully, but in America, we have those stupid commercials where there's like this couple, they're like in their 50s and 60s, and they're like smiling in front. They're like, they're talking about this anti-aging clinic that they went to. And as twisted and as fucked up as that is, but in America, we actually have commercials for anti-aging clinics, as crazy as that sounds. But the fact that they make that much money where they can spend that much on advertising during like football games and stuff shows you how much money these motherfuckers are making off of people. But they're standing there like they got their arms around each other, like our libido is, and they look at each other like it's like we're 20 again. They're like smiling and happy. So it's that kind of effect. And it's kind of overstated. It's overstated, like when it comes when it comes to that. But I think if you're taking something like tons of testosterone and tons of tren, you're going to get much more of a libido effect. But it's a gentle effect with the HGH. And definitely, if you're low with HGH, you'll notice, wow, I'm able to get better erections. I'm able to get better libido. Yeah, that's the benefits you'll get. Next one, improvements in immune system. This is a big one, especially with these super bugs that we're seeing, and there will be more. There will be more.
That's been throughout history, Steve. It's not a new thing.
And as human beings, you know, we've had to overcome these. And Mobster, your ancestors in Europe during the Middle Ages, got half of you got wiped out for these pandemics through the Black Plague. But how do we, you know, what do we do? What do we do? We want to keep our immune system strong. If you've got low HGH levels, your immune system's already going to be weak.
Not only that, Steve, from an athlete's point of view, we are stressing our bodies. And again, this is a higher end athletes. You're pushing your response to training to the highest possible level, and that will suppress your immune system. If you overtrain, you get more colds, more likely to have spots and so on. So anything that improves your immune system is going to improve your anti-inflammatory response and your response to pushing as hard as you can in the gym or on the pitch or during the game. Back to you.
Yeah. That's very, very beneficial. Another thing too is going to be these kind of go together. Increased metabolism, increased fat loss. So when you use anabolic steroids, some of you who are a little bit overweight, you'll be on anabolic steroids. You're like, wow, I'm leaning out. Even though anabolic steroids aren't fat loss, drugs or anything like that, and but you'll still notice that, and it's because your metabolism is going up, so you're able to burn more calories, you know, nonstop. But it's not like it's a stimulant effect. HGH works a little different, and it works more effectively and more directly than anabolic steroids when it comes to increased metabolism and increased fat loss. And those two work together. So you'll notice on HGH, usually into the second or third month, you'll start noticing, wow, I'm losing more body fat, even though I'm not necessarily exercising more and I'm not necessarily eating better or eating less calories. Wow, but I'm still losing fat. So that's what HGH can do for you. And then the last one, Mobster, is deeper sleep. And when I was on HGH, it wasn't that I was sleeping longer. It's actually I was sleeping less longer on HGH because the sleep that you do get, you're sleeping harder. And I know, Mobster, you're on Nutriball. You're probably noticing that because you're taking
I mean,
Nutriball.
I'll touch on this very quickly, Steve. I mean, Steve and I are quite big when we talk about this on the forums about making sure you go to bed early and getting your full 8 hours. And it doesn't have to be 8 hours, but simply you must go to bed and be get rested. There are too many people in this day and age, never mind us that go to the gym and work out for performance enhancement, who stay up late, watch Netflix, eat crap, and then get up and have coffee for breakfast and all this kind of fucked up shit. And the patterns of behavior are rubbish. When you get into training and training hard, specifically performance enhancement here, as we're talking about today with products like paratropin, it would be to elicit the best response you can get from your body. And that means getting rest, and it means getting a proper night's sleep. Now, that might be 6 hours. It might be 9 hours. It is specific to you. If you're tossing and turning, if you're big as I am, and you might suffer from apnea just from being a big motherfucker, anything that makes your sleep more restful is useful. And the benefits of both Nutrabol, aka MK677, are well known. But growth hormone is, of course, for obvious reasons, is the difference between a testosterone booster and actual testosterone, and a SARM like MK677, an actual growth hormone. It will be on another level. And it might mean, for example, getting the same amount of sleep, but feeling way more energetic in the morning, better rested, and because sleep is part of that process, better recovered. So it is super, super important, as Steve says. But what about the side effects? Now, I'll touch on one. It's not actually in the, it's in the list, but it's not number one. And what we see a lot of this talked about, Steve. So, and it can, and again, it depends on the condition of the user, the amount that the user's using, the rest of their lifestyle, their diet, their training, and so on and so forth. So, a big one, a big indicator is water retention, Steve. So, talk about that specifically, and you will have a back and forth over the other side effects.
So when you first start using growth hormone, some people are going to notice some water retention right off the bat. And that's pretty normal. Some people won't. It just depends. So don't start freaking out if your weight jumps, you know, the first couple of weeks you're on HGH or, but this is really, see, with these side effects are pretty, get more common the more you abuse HGH. But if you're using HGH, and we're going to talk about the dosing on the next segment for an average Joe versus a pro. But if you're using HGH for an average Joe, you know, at a dosage that's proper, these side effects won't even happen. The water retention wouldn't even happen. But that's for people who are using way too much. Because when you use way too much, you get other side effects. You get the hypoglycemia effects. And that's where your blood sugar is all haywire, you know, and you feel like I got to eat all the time. And that's a big one because that is a side effect, and I'll actually add that, like, in a lot of people don't mention that, but how about appetite? Like, appetite can be a benefit, but it also can be a detriment, because if you're hungry, if you go to work, right, and you work 7 hours of construction and you get like a 15 minute lunch break, okay, and before lunch and after lunch you're fucking hungry because you're on HGH, you're fucking hungry all fucking day, that's a detriment. It's annoying. How about waking up in the middle of the night and you're like, man, I'm hungry, or waking up first thing in the morning and man, I got tons of appetite. That could be a negative too. So again, if you're using too much HGH, you get these side effects. Pain in joints, that's another one. Again, it ties into the water retention. And then how about this one, carpal tunnel? And this one is one of the ones that people notice. Some of these others, they may not notice a little water retention.
Let me touch on that, Steve. I mentioned it briefly yesterday. So you have repetitive strain syndrome, which is doing the same thing again and again, and you can have a tweaky elbow. It was common with typists with tweaky wrist. And I say tweaky, basically pain from using their hands to type all day long. So carpal tunnel is very similar. And essentially what happens is the tendon, the connective tissue, which I've touched upon at the beginning of the show, strengthens and it thickens up a little tiny bit. The problem is those tendons run through sheaths, tunnels, also made of connective tissue. And that in addition to the connective tissue, the tunnel getting thicker, the tendons running through the tunnel gets thicker. That's actually what you kind of want. You want stronger, thicker tendons, but you don't necessarily want them so thick that they are rubbing against the side of that sheath and then it actually causes you pain and discomfort. It is dose connected and it's a great indicator, number one, as we said on yesterday's show, that you are using legit growth hormone, but it also probably an indicator that you're using ever so slightly too much. There might also be something to say with regards to the fact that you're pushing yourself harder in the gym, so therefore you're more likely to have connective tunnel or connective tissue injuries because you're straining so goddamn hard by lifting heavier weights, by doing more volume, and so on and so forth. All of these things are signs that you might be overtraining or using too much growth hormone and so on and so forth. But as I said, it's even been used as I know that I'm on legit growth hormone because I'm getting carpal tunnel. Again, it's a risk that a professional athlete might take because it's really important for them at the highest possible level. But I would probably try to avoid it as an average Joe using growth hormone. And I would we talk about this and literally just having the individual tweak the amount that they're using down to a slightly lower dose, and we'll get into that in a minute, is sufficient enough to take away that particular issue. But again, I'd rather not have it, Steve. I want a certain kind of weird pain from lifting heavy, heavy shit. I don't want actual out and out discomfort. And it won't just be when you're in the gym, guys. It will be obviously opening a fucking car door, switching on a light. We don't want that. So again, it's an indicator. One more, and it's just at the end of the article that we're going to associate with this podcast. And I'll touch on this very quickly, Steve, was the quote unquote growth gut that was talked about back in the day. Now, there was an argument to be made, and it tied in obviously with increased PED use of all kinds, including testosterone, and of course, insulin use at the same time. And then you had athletes in pro bodybuilders that were doing six, sometimes I heard numbers like 10 fucking meals a day, Steve. Realistically, 3-4 is the maximum. So it was a volume of food issue. It was the fact, as we've seen in the last couple of years, where they've actually been specifically required to control their stomachs. It was not practicing vacuums. It was poor posing practice. That was part of it. But I mean, it actually had the name at one point of Palumboism, named after bodybuilder Dave Palumbo, who at one point was 280 to 300 pounds. And you had people that were 4% body fat with an 8-pack, with a 6-pack, but the stomach was sticking out. Ronnie Coleman even struggled with it toward the end of his career. And photographs were appearing from the stage looking into the audience. So you saw the bodybuilder doing a back pose for the judges, for the audience, but his stomach would be sticking out on the far side, quite relaxed. And these growth hormone bellies. The reality is, I suspect, and I've argued this when it's come up, it wasn't necessarily organs growing because a lot of those athletes, and I'll include Dave Palumbo again, stomach returns to normal when they quit professional level bodybuilding and shrunken down to normal-ish size for those older athletes. So, you know, Ronnie Coleman is a good example. Again, Steve, he's not still walking around with his huge sticking out belly. But it was definitely associated with increased PED use, insulin use, and of course growth hormone being combined with insulin, along with the food manipulation that the higher end athletes had. It wasn't an attractive thing. And of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger banged that particular drum loud and proud a couple of years ago at the Arnold, and it's now being rewarded. But the athletes keep their stomachs under control, practice vacuums more, have a smaller waist, and be more attractive to the eye. It's not a good look. Back to you for the next portion, Steve.
Yeah, one more cancer, and this is another controversial one. And here's the thing with growth hormone. The last episode we talked about what growth hormone does in terms of cells, not just growing cells, but also splitting and growing cells. So if you've got
any cell growth, Steve, yes, any, not just muscle cells or connective tissue cells, it's all cellular growth.
Yeah, and that includes cancer cells, unfortunately. So if you have cancer in your body, and HGH is not a good idea to use. Now, is using HGH going to cause cancer? No, but no. We've seen with young bodybuilders who, you know, when they've done autopsies on them, the ones that have been abusing HGH for years, and they've opened them up and have found cancer spreading more than they should be for someone their age. So we have some evidence to show that if you abuse HGH, which Mobster and I don't recommend, in the next segment we're gonna talk about how to use HGH safely and how to use it not safely. And we're gonna show you the way it's done. This is what we're giving. We're giving you the information. We're not telling you to go abuse it.
The classic athlete, Steve, and I'm going to name him because it was mentioned in a bunch of other podcasts. I don't think I'm doing anything wrong here. Dallas McCarver, Dallas Carver was a high end, very sort of touted as a possible Mr. Olympia, et cetera, et cetera. The problem was a couple of things. And the issue here, not specific just to Dallas, was pre-existing medical issues that were genetic for the family. So, for example, cancer or heart issues or diabetes and so on and so forth, type 1 specifically. If you have these pre-existing issues in the genes of your family, especially your parents and grandparents, uncles and aunties, not multiple generations, but relatively close generations of family, and then you do something which raises the likelihood of those things happening, you are pushing the risk. It's understandable as a high-end athlete. And again, the obvious one here would be if your parents have both had indicators for cancer, if members of your family have had indicators for cancer, breast cancer, liver cancer, whatever, brain cancer, and then you go out and take growth hormone, your chances are going to be a lot higher than they would be otherwise. So it's not that it necessarily gives you cancer, because I don't believe that's the case, and the studies need to be explored further, but certainly that the risk factors are a lot. Basically, I use this phrase sometimes, if you are rolling the dice and you are hoping to win. So again, it's also dose dependent. Again, if you're going to stay on longer, if you're going to use the higher doses, which we'll get into now, then the chances are that much higher. That applies to all performance enhancing drugs, whether they're stimulatory, whether they're testosterone based, or whether they're peptide / growth hormone based. Certain elements will push the risk factor higher. You have to decide for yourself, the listener, the individual, whether or not you're going to take those risks. But we want to make sure that you're aware of those risks. On to you, Steve.
All right, so let's get into the average Joe stack, how you would use HGH. So let's first talk about how would we use HGH if we're going to use it solo, all right? And, you know, look, at the end of the day, I saw a thread this morning on the forum. Someone was asking about using HGH on one of the forums that we partner with. And he was asking, can I use HGH solo? And he's like, I did it. I use HGH solo and I had some good things happen, but I'm reading that you can't use HGH solo. So look, at the end of the day, yes, obviously it's just like steroids. You use a steroid solo, you're going to have this happen. If you start stacking them, you're going to have more stuff. The more stuff you stack, it's kind of like the question of testosterone as a base. Should I use testosterone as a base? Well, I have better results when I use testosterone on base. Yeah, no shit, because you're using more gear, genius.
Yes,
so if you, I mean, it's the same thing. So, I mean, it's like with HGH, you can get some good benefits. And I've used HGH solo and I've used it stacked. At the end of the day, it really depends on what your goals are. But if you just want, you know, low side effects, you just want to get some boost to appetite, some boost to your sleep quality, some fat loss benefits, then you can go ahead and run HGH for a few months or longer. Mm-hmm. And you can run it, you know, anywhere from 1 to 2 IUs a day. And that would be good. The nice thing about the paratropin is that if you were to do that, if you were to run, you know, 1 or 2 IUs only, each kit will last you quite a while. So
yeah,
really,
50 days. Yeah.
So you'll have plenty of opportunity to do it. So those are really good ways to do it. Go ahead, Mobster.
Yeah. One of the things I've said, and I, again, in yesterday's show, I referred to this again. So I went away and looked at HGH as a potential assist for managing Crohn's and colitis in two of my local buddies. And I went on, funny enough, it was a HIV forum, and looked at the conversations that were taking place, the amount that was being used on a monthly basis by those individuals, and so on and so forth. And the sweet spot, and this specifically applied to the carpal tunnel, which we just touched upon, was between 2 to 2.5 IUs a day, or the equivalent. When I say the equivalent, for example, 5 IUs on a Monday, and then wait until the Wednesday, 5 IUs on a Wednesday, and so on and so forth. So it was the equivalent of 2 to 2.5 IUs. you're going to get an effect at the lower things. Going back to something else Steve just touched upon as well, there is definitely an argument to be made for using it solo because it will have an effect. But again, this comes from the professional and the amateur competing side of bodybuilding. There is an argument to be made for the synergistic effect. In other words, if you take testosterone on its own, you're going to get a benefit, the positives of adding muscle and so on and so forth. If you take growth hormone on its own, you're going to get a benefit. If the combined two is a slightly increased benefit because it does seem to work in synergistic effect, a combined effect where you will gain that little bit more muscle or that little bit more recovery if you combine the two versus using the little effect that you get from one on its own or the other one on its own. So definitely not. So Steve says one to two. I would say the upper limit is 2.5 IUs. We see people post about running it. And I would argue, Steve, just from seeing tens of thousands of forum posts and talking to users, et cetera, once it gets over the equivalent of 3 IUs a day, you're way more likely to see the side effects that we talked about. And again, you are hoping that the individual has great nutrition, good training, and so on and so forth. That's not always the case, that whether they've mixed it properly, whether they've injected it correctly, and so on and so forth. We don't get to see all that information, and I sometimes have to ask to make sure it's been run properly. Something that Steve's touched upon, and I think you could jump back in here, Steve, it doesn't have to be used every single day. You talked about, I believe, 5 days on, 2 days off as an example for growth hormone. Touch on that before we talk about what pros do.
So ACH, it goes in pulses. So, you know, when you take it, you're getting, boom, you're getting a pulse. So yesterday, you know, I talked about during a fast, ACH in the body naturally rises in a linear fashion, not up, down, up, down, up, down. Because if you're eating, you know, every 2 hours throughout the day, that's what's going to happen. It's going to go up, down, up, down. And you're not going to have any growth hormone effects that way. But if you're doing like time-restricted eating, intermittent fasting, you're going to have your growth hormone rise. And then when you eat your meal, your growth hormone is going to come right back down and then begin rising again. And if you do like a five-day fast, during that five-day fast, your growth hormone will rise in a linear fashion. Just like going up a roller coaster. And then when you break your fast after 5 days, then it will crash back down. So the idea here by using exogenous growth hormone is you want to give it a pulse. It's not like using anabolic steroids, which have esters attached to them, which have slow release, which you should be injecting or taking on a consistent basis. So you build up a peak level. HGH is in and out of your system. So that's why, as we talked about in the previous episode, in part one, you know, it's hard to detect it in doping. So that's why a lot of athletes like to use HGH. So let me get into some stacks, how to stack it with some piriformis options. I'm going to start with one, Mobster, and then you're going to do another one. But we're going to do the paratropin HGH 1 to 2 IUs per day, and then we're going to stack it with the piriformis boldo, which is Equipoise, 300 milligrams a week, and then we're going to stack Parapharma Turonable 20 milligrams a day. This is going to be the ideal average Joe endurance stack. So if you're a guy or gal, obviously a gal, you're going to use different dosing when it comes to this. So with a gal, you're going to use way less Equipoise and way less T-Bol, obviously. And you're going to probably just be able to get away with one IU of HGH a day. But this is great for those of you who want to do a lot of active stuff. You like to hike, you like to do road races, you like to do long bicycle rides, you like to compete in triathlons, all this different things. This is the ultimate stack for that. And that would give you a huge recovery and endurance boost for that type of training. Mobster, what you got for stacking?
I'm a great believer in this, and I use the phrase you used yesterday as well, Steve, when I say they keep it simple. Approach appeals to me, and we touched upon the fact that I might not necessarily benefit from this myself, but it's an enormously popular form of testosterone amongst the most users. So real simple, Steve. 250 milligrams testo to E50. If it's testosterone in amphate, I'd run that for, they say, 2 mil a week. That's 500 milligrams. Real simple. Maybe take that up to 1,000 milligrams a week if you're a little bit more hardcore. And I would appreciate that you probably are if you're going to use human growth hormone as well. So somewhere between the 500 and 1,000 milligrams a week total. You might have another form of testosterone in there. And again, it depends on what your specific aims are, as Steve said. And then again, I think I use Steve's protocol again of two and a half IUs a day, 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, especially my training days, and make sure. And that's, again, a real, real simple approach using Parapharma products. Again, this, whether you want hardening, so for example, masterosome and a testosterone combination with human growth hormone, whether you want strength, there's a great, I know of strength athletes that have used it. So for example, Steve, again, testosterone in effect has been used by my strength buddies at around the 500 to 750 milligrams a week mark. So that would be great strength stack, never mind bodybuilding and muscular stack. Well, do another stack, Steve, and then let's get into what we think pros are using and pro use, and specifically our own pro.
So another stack you could do is an anti-aging stack. And this is one, if you go to an anti-aging clinic and you want to hand them over, you know, thousands of dollars, you could go to an anti-aging clinic and do, or you can just go to Parapharma and get the same exact thing for a fraction of the price.
Yes.
For a fraction of the price. So in this example, you'd run basically a TRT level of testosterone, which is somewhere between 100 to 125 milligrams a week. And then you'd run an anti-aging dosage of HGH, somewhere between 1 to 2 IUs, even 1.5 IUs would be the sweet spot. And you just run that together, and this would be an anti-aging hormone replacement therapy type of stack. If you are someone already on TRT, or if you're someone who's ready to go on TRT, this is a great stack for you, for someone who's older, in their 50s or in their 60s. And this is something that I'm going to definitely consider once I start getting closer to mobster's age. And it would be a great way to keep myself active. And you wouldn't be causing any negative effects. As long as you kept the dosing correctly and you're using high-quality products, you would actually not affect your long-term, you know, health. And you're not going to shorten your lifespan. You could actually increase your lifespan if you do it properly. But of course,
one more question, Steve, which I think is super, super important. And sorry for jumping in here. Something that gets argued about, and I know Steve's got an opinion on this. Now, let's imagine that we're talking about running paratropin solo. There's an argument to be made, and I kind of agree with it, see if you disagree. When it comes to human growth hormone, the length of time. Now, I might not, for example, if we were talking about a cycle, we're not necessarily talking about a long period of time. But growth hormone for the recovery benefits for anti-aging properties, what would you discuss briefly the arguments to be made for 3 months, 6 months, or stand on growth hormone for as long as possible, and specifically for the average Joe again?
Yeah, so that's the thing, though. If you're stacking anabolic steroids with it and you want to cycle, so what you could do is get on HGH a couple months ahead of time, then run your anabolic steroids for 12 weeks. Really, any anabolic steroid. We've given you examples. You know, we've given you a testosterone, Masteron, T-Bol. We've given you all these examples. And I'm going to give you one more after I talk about this. But a good idea, we start the growth hormone 2 months ahead of time. You're on it. And then by month three, that's when really start getting a lot of the fat loss benefits really start to kick in as your body's adjusting to the growth hormone. And then by then you can hop on your anabolic steroids and get those effects. So even if you're doing want recovery or strength or any of the stuff that we talked about, that would be a good strategy, because you can't just stay on high amounts of anabolic steroids year round. That's going to age you. It's not going to be anti-aging. So you've got to keep that in mind. So I'll give you one more, Mobster. It's a very good one. And this is a fat loss stack using anabolic steroids. So you can try that strategy that I was just telling you. Start the HGH ahead of time, somewhere between 1 to 2 IUs. You know, that's the sweet spot for an average Joe. And then Anavar 50 milligrams a day. You can throw in some testosterone. You can throw in some Primo, maybe 100 milligrams of testosterone and maybe say 300 to 500 milligrams of Primo. Okay, depending on what your budget allows. And that would be a good cutting stack. So you'd run that stack for 12 weeks, then you come off, and then you continue with the HGH. And if you're going to go into PCT, if you're cycling, you go ahead and go into PCT. And Parapharma has you covered with PCT products. So that would be a really good cutting stack as well. All right, so let's get into professional usage. Now, it's not what we think, Mobster. It's what we know. Because one of the guys on our team on the forum, he's open about his gear usage.
Yeah, we're not guessing here, guys. We're actually going to quote
in
the
his
stack
where he 30, yeah. where he lives, anabolic steroids are legal to possess, and you know, they're not, you know, you can't sell them, you can't do this, they can't do that, but you can possess them, you're not gonna get in trouble. So he's open about it.
Yep.
And he's going up against some of the top competitors out there. So for him, you know, he needs to look a certain way. So his stats are 5'5", and what does he weigh, Mobster? Like
103.3 kilos, which is about 227 pounds. And in fact, the date, I'll give you a specific date for this. It's called the Road to FIBO 2024. The date that he posted this information was early last week, and the start, he gave the body weight at the beginning of the year, 25th of January 2024. So 46 years old, he will be, as you say, Steve, looking, if this is the go to FIBO, he's a professional bodybuilder, he goes to the exhibitions, he wants to look in amazing shape, walking around, working for exhibitors, etc., etc. So not only is he a WABA pro, he is a professional in his approach to bodybuilding. And so this is what you're looking at. I've seen photographs of him as a young man, and he had an amazing physique. And obviously we know what he looks like now as a professional bodybuilder, and the way that he works when he's at these events, et cetera, et cetera. So he's definitely, he's not hiding his light under a bushel. He's not bullshitting you. He's telling you exactly what he's doing. So let's get into the specifics now, Steve, of his stack.
Yeah, and just the full disclosure, don't try this at home. This is
No. Look, let me touch on that very, very quickly. I've actually argued this with him, and I've argued this sometimes, and I understand the mentality, right? So if you are a up-and-coming young bodybuilder, you've been training for a little while, and you get into the whole, I'm old enough to use PEDs, I know what the risk factors are, et cetera, et cetera. It's quite simple. Right? The difference between me kicking a ball around a football round the park, my back garden, whatever, assuming I had a back garden, but just kicking a ball around with my grandchildren, for example, is a million light years away from being a professional soccer player. The same thing applies to American football, and the same thing applies to professional bodybuilding. When I am, for example, let's use the pro American football as an example, a mediocre pro American football player can be on $30 million a year. The top end guys are on more money than that. The top end golfers are on crazy money. It's not been racing car drivers are on 40, 50 million pounds, 60, 70 million dollars a year. The risk factor, the length of your career is quite short. Me being able to kick a ball around with my grandkids can last forever until I fall over, Steve. Me being able to play at a high level is a very short career. So I'm willing to risk certain particular things. And this includes, to some small degree, my health. So when we talk about this podcast, all of the shows that Steve and I have done, especially together, have been about the idea of promoting as best we possibly can the benefits of using certain medications to make you a better bodybuilder. But if you're not competing on stage as an amateur, never mind a pro, if you're not competing as a pro with WABA, with IFBB or whoever, if you're not literally standing on the Mr. Olympia stage and might maybe this year at the Arnold, Steve, win $500,000, half a million fucking dollars, and hopefully do that next year and a year after, then why the fuck are you spending $30,000, sometimes more, because we hear about big numbers, and risk dying or having permanent issues because of our steroid, because of our anabolic use? So we try to take a responsible approach. However, I understand to some small degree the psyche, the drive, the dedication, the level of obsession required to compete at the highest level, even in my own little niche. Right? I wanted to fuck my shit up so that I would kick motherfucking ass on the day of a competition. And I was never a big user of PEDs, still not now, but I get it. I understand it. But then to look at that and think that you could do it as an average Joe is not the way that we do it. So we do this for educational purposes, entertainment a little bit, and just to give you an indication of what the obsessed, the driven, but the competitively driven and the competitively obsessed higher end athletes are doing. Make sure you're aware of that before we get into the meat and potatoes of the actual information, Steve.
All right, so let's kind of go through it, and then we're gonna move on to talking a little bit about HCG as well. So, which he does not run in this. So this is a stack: testosterone intake 2,100 milligrams a week. Trend 1,400 milligrams a week, Masterin 1,400 milligrams a week, Winstrol oral 100 milligrams a day, Superdrol 30 milligrams a day, T4, which is thyroid, a thyroid medication.
That one, that's micrograms. Yeah, micrograms, yeah. I think that is.
Yeah, it's micrograms, 100 yeah. micrograms per day. T3, which is also for thyroid, 12.5 micrograms a day, which is a low dose, but because he's using the T4, he doesn't have to run it very high.
Usually and the other drugs. Yeah.
Well, that's with the thyroid. And then clenbuterol, yeah. 120 micrograms a day, which is, you know, pretty strong dose. Yeah. Proviron, 50 milligrams a day. Then he has...
Maybe 100, he says in brackets, maybe. On top of everything else. Carry on, Steve.
And then he's got a couple anti-estrogens. Aromacin, 25 milligrams a day. Not micrograms, milligrams a day.
Yeah, it's written there, I don't know. Yeah.
Ralox, which is another anti-estrogen, 60 milligrams a day. And then Dosinex for the prolactin, a quarter milligram a day. And then yeah. we've got, a quarter milligram twice a week. And then here's the HGH, 10 IUs before bed and 10 IUs fasted in the morning. So he'll take it, the 10 IUs in the morning before he eats his breakfast. And then he'll eat his breakfast and then he'll do his workout. And then he'll either do his workout in the morning or he'll do his workout in the evening. And then he'll take 10 more IUs of HGH. So 20 yeah. IUs of HGH per day, which is 10 times some, you know, really 10 or 30, 10 or 30, 20 times what the average Joe is using. So now you yes. see why people get so many side effects.
Let me touch on this very quickly, Steve, and something we've actually covered already, right? Look at the before bed and the fasted morning. So I'm going to jump in here for a second, Steve. That means he's getting the sleep and recovery benefits with the nightly dose. And I think Steve's correct. I'm going to say that he's training in the morning. So he's training fasted, bearing in mind what Steve said about fasting and how that applies to growth hormone release. And then he's taking 10 IUs then, fasted. So he's literally trying to deplete some of his glycogen stores. And then I don't doubt for a second, because look at we know that he's going to be mucking around with insulin as well. So he's literally depleting deliberately. That's kind of a protocol that some of the pros are using, deplete the glycogen, and then a very short period after training, using insulin and glucose, carbs, et cetera, to fill the muscles back up, to speed up the recovery, to literally sort of kind of inflate the muscle cells, the carbohydrate stores. And he's doing this all. And I know that he trains with a very high volume, typically 25 sets per body part, done at a very fast pace. So again, there's a depletion protocol here that people might want to look at as well. I'll touch on a couple of the others here, Steve. IGF, 200 IUs, pre-workout, again, Humalog, he doesn't specify specifically how much. Telemastarin, yeah, 8
that's milligrams. That's the insulin.
Today.
The Humalog is the insulin.
That's why I thought so, because yeah. it doesn't say how much of whatever.
But the reason, the reason he doesn't say is that he adjusts it. It depends on how much he's going to eat, how much carbs he's going to eat.
Yeah.
You know, if he eats very clean carbs like sweet potatoes, rice, it's going to be less. If he's throwing in some more, you know, complex carbs, maybe some more sugary carbs, he goes maybe with white rice instead of brown rice, it's going to be a little more. So he'll adjust it based on his diet and how he feels and stuff and his workouts as well. So that's
Let me touch on one more thing before we finish the list here, Steve. So something I've touched upon when we refer to both growth hormone and specifically growth hormone in combination with insulin, there are protocols that you should follow as a professional bodybuilder. And I'm thinking specifically Milos Sarsiv talking about these protocols for glycogen depletion and so on that I touched upon just now. And the great and vast majority of users do not follow these protocols, so they don't necessarily get the benefits. There is a risk factor, again, for example, messing around with insulin. If you do it right, if you train right, if you eat correctly straight afterwards, and in his case, probably has his girlfriend around to make sure that he doesn't fucking keel over and or faint or die by making sure that there's food available immediately after training, rather than forgetting it, coming driving home from the gym, for example, because I know he doesn't do that, and other bits and pieces. The protocol needs to be followed for you to get the best results. And at a professional level, like this individual, there's that sort of stuff there. I'll touch upon a little bit now, Steve, in terms of the misinformation. Right. So, for example, and I touched on this briefly yesterday, pre-show research yesterday, science versus and the media versus the practical application that we've talked about with high-end athletes. Media, for example, Steve, was an Australian news program saying that teenagers were using growth hormone, and then specifically referred to in the news piece how they were going to GNC and buying an over-the-counter growth hormone booster. That's not using growth hormones, news person. So that's bullshit. teenagers don't have the money to buy growth hormone. You've got $500, you're probably spending it on sneakers. Never mind growth hormone. It's a bit, so it was stupid. The science. The problem sometimes with scientific studies is that the scientific studies are done with less than performance enhancement amounts. And for example, Steve, I saw a show where they were discussing both the anti-aging and quote unquote, did it shorten your lifespan? Well, it's one or the other, motherfucker. Which is it? And there was no data because of the variations in the protocols, the uses, the conditions of the individuals. So the doctor was stating that they believed it would shorten your lifespan, but had no evidence, but seemed to be quite stuck on that particular argument. Whereas the other person on the other side of the table was actually talking about, you know, so it's using life extension clinics to make you younger, but you think people are dying. And then the one that stuck in my mind, and it was a individual that used to be on a TV show that had got into shape and admitted on camera to news and reporters and whatever some years ago that they had used both testosterone and growth hormone from an anti-aging clinic to get into shape. Their buddy, who looked very similar physically, of a certain particular look, similar condition before they started training, trained together. And then the news item was thus. He had died, and I quote, at a relatively young age of 69. Well, that's 3 score and fucking 10. So in other words, he'd made it to 70, which was perfectly reasonable, but died sooner than he needed to. And I quote, because he might have been using growth hormone. Shut the fuck up. He's literally the holy, I mean, I'm not even religiously, but the 3 score and 10 is in the fucking Bible. The holy Bible. I wouldn't say the fucking Bible, I'd be rude. So he's lasted as long as a man is supposed to last. And he might have died young because of growth hormone. Come on. If you're going to say this stuff on the news, if you're going to quote it, the scientific stuff and so on and so forth, then please at least have some sort of basis for doing so. The reality of the situation, as perverse as it might be, is that sometimes the evidence and statistics and stuff that actually should be useful, ironically, is coming from bodybuilders because of our application with nutrition, because our applications in a healthy lifestyle with regards to getting up early, getting your cardio in, getting your daily steps in, eating properly, eating cleanly, and going to the gym, because not everybody's using PEDs, but an enormous amount, massive, 30 million people in America alone, 5 million people in this country regularly exercise. And you should look at the information coming from those people. And if a percentage, let's say 3 million in America, are using growth hormone at performance enhancement or anti-aging levels, then get your statistical information from those individuals and not necessarily from the ethically restricted or morally restricted studies that the science is basing some of its information on. And of course, that same science, the same doctors are then going to be giving growth hormone on occasion for certain medical conditions that require it, but they're not doing it at PED dosages. So the misinformation is enormous. And again, there's an obvious example. Those of you that train, those of you that eat clean, those of you who get your steps in daily, are already applying certain healthy parameters to your life. For you to use a small amount of sensibly dosed growth hormone is arguably beneficial versus the idea that the only reason you look that way, the only reason you're lean, the only reason you're healthy, the only reason you're strong is because of growth hormone. No, motherfucker. It's the 20 years of training my ass off. It's the 30 years of eating clean. It's the making sure I get my steps in every fucking day, no matter what. That is the reason, and growth hormone helps me with that. So on to the next portion, Steve, as we get towards the end.
All right, so let's touch on a little bit about ACG, as promised. And look, ACG, it is very similar because it's a peptide, but it's completely different in that it's a peptide hormone found naturally in the body, same just like HGH. But in this example, it comes from pregnant female, and it helps balance and control the women's hormones. So obviously, when you get ACG, it's synthesized in a lab. It's not actually female pregnant female piss. But what's interesting, it kind of ties into HGH, is one of the ways you can tell if your HGH is really ACG, which sources do, is you can go get a pregnancy test, and you can mix up the HGH and put it on there. And if it comes out that you're pregnant, that means that you're really using ACG. And sources did this a lot back in the 90s and 2000s because ACG is a hell of a lot cheaper. But anyway, long story short, ACG is sold by Parapharma. It comes in 5,000 IU each. And ECG mimics LH in the body for males. Now, the advantage of that is that it will stimulate your Leydig cells into producing testosterone. And that can be helpful for a lot of you on cycle because it will help you plump your balls. It can help you boost your libido. It can help you, even some people say it helps them lose fat, although that's never been really proven, but people have used ACG in the past for fat loss. Side effects of ACG you got to watch out for. It is suppressive, so you don't want to use ACG in PCT. You don't really want to use ACG either in a bridge. The best time to use ACG would be toward the tail end of a cycle because that will help plump up your balls and boost estrogen a little bit and boost up your libido. But you definitely don't want to use it in PCT because it will actually prevent recovery. Another side effect you got to watch out for is the rise in estrogen and progesterone with ACG.
Let me jump in for a second here, Steve. Sorry to interrupt. And it's something that Steve and I are big on. So you just heard Steve, and I agree with him, about not using it in PCT. But how common do we see it being recommended in PCTs by pretty much every other forum and by would-be experts again and again and again? Steve and I have touched upon this a bunch of times. Let me touch on it from my point of view, and I'll let Steve expand on it very briefly. So I don't care, because my balls never shrink down that much because I don't use loads of gear, that my balls are going to be slowly recovering after a cycle. I let them recover. I have long times off in between cycles, ideally. And my balls never shrink that much, but it is a big deal for a lot of fellas that use PEDs, specifically testosterone, and they get a lot of noticeable ball shrinkage. And so they become obsessed with this problem. Sometimes their girlfriends, partners, whatever, mention it. And so they use HCG and APCT. But as Steve's pointed out, it doesn't mean your testosterone is recovered. It's just plumping your bollocks, as we say in the UK, Steve. So your balls look bigger, but your testosterone levels still haven't come back to normal. Touch upon that, because I know it's a bone of contention for you as well.
Yeah, very, very important. So, you may feel better on ACG using it in PCT, which you probably will, because you're getting that nice boost of testosterone and estrogen. But at the same time, it's signaling your pituitary glands to not produce the LH and FSH because it's mimicking the LH, you see. So it's very important to know that. So the misconception is people will use it in PCT and be like, oh my God, I feel so much better. Well, the thing is, you feel so much better because it's a hormone. So hormones do not need to be used in PCT because they will delay recovery. So I just want to be clear about that. But if you want to go ahead and use it in PCT, that's your business. If you want to listen to some idiots on YouTube or whatever and get, do what they tell you to do, then that's your business. It's a free country. Yeah. You can do what the fuck you want. But I'm just telling you that that's the way to use it. So Parapharma does have ACG. You can go ahead and run it if you're looking for that benefit. So that pretty much sums it up, Mobster. I think it was a really, really great show. We gave a lot of up-to-date information on both HGH and on ACG and showed you guys and gals out there how to use it. So take us a disclaimer.
Yeah. Again, please note, we are not doctors and opinions are ours. It's our view and based on our experience and views on the topic. Our podcasts are for informational purposes and entertainment only. The freedom of speech and the First Amendment.